Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. Three aid workers were killed in Morobo County.
Innocent civilians and humanitarian workers should not be a target of such senseless acts of violence.
And President Kiir orders police officials to work with opposition forces.
When you in the South Sudan National Police Service are unified, I warn you on our side to welcome your brothers and sisters.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, is condemning the killing of three of its aid workers on Sunday during fighting between government forces and National Salvation Front, or NAS, rebels in Yei River State, Morobo County. IOM says it is suspending Ebola screening activities at various locations near the South Sudan DR Congo border because it is too dangerous to continue operations in those areas. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
IOM Communications Officer in Juba, Leatile Putwa, says the volunteer aid workers, one female and two males, who were all natives of Morobo County, were caught in crossfire between government forces and NAS rebels in the remote village of Isebi.
So deeply saddened by the loss of our staff members. And, you know, we reiterate that innocent civilians and humanitarian workers should not be a target of such senseless acts of violence.
Putwa says IOM does not have a clear readout on what the aid workers were doing when they got caught up in the fighting that erupted over the weekend. In a press statement released today, IOM says two other male volunteers suffered non-life-threatening injuries and that one of the injured is recovering from a gunshot wound. The statement also says a female volunteer and the son of a murdered female aid worker were abducted in the attack. Their whereabouts are unknown. Emmy Antinoja runs the communications office in Juba for the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs.
OCHA, like the humanitarian coordinator, strongly condemns the violence against humanitarian workers and demands that those responsible for this act be brought to justice.
Yesterday, the National Salvation Front issued a statement in which it accused the South Sudan People's Defense Force, or SSPDF, of attacking rebel positions in Morobo County on October 27th and 28th, saying NAS forces fought back in self-defense. When asked about the aid workers who were killed Sunday, NAS spokesperson Suba Samuel wondered how it could be that IOM aid workers were among 17 government forces that he claims NAS killed during the fighting.
I don't know how IOM personnel happened to be involved in that, but what we know, the attack that our base was attacked and we pursued the SSPDF soldiers, purely a military operation. If they are civilians, then that might be the wives of those soldiers that are out.
SSPDF spokesperson Major General Lulrai Kong confirmed that clashes occurred in Morobo County on Sunday, but accused NAS rebels of attacking government forces' positions in Isebi. Asked why aid workers were killed in the attack, Kong said he was not aware of any deaths of IOM employees.
The report I received did not indicate that we had personnel from that organization. We had just referred to that we were also killed along with our servicemen. There was no indication. You could find out from a civil authority, but the area that was attacked was fully ours. So I'm not aware of that. Maybe they were attacked in a separate incident.
Kong confirmed one woman and a child have gone missing following the clashes in Morobo. Putwa says IOM has suspended its Ebola awareness and monitoring activities along the South Sudan Democratic Republic of Congo border following the recent violence.
Right now, the measures that we have taken after this incident is that we have suspended operations in five locations where we're operating point of entry sites. These are in Isebi, Bazi, Kirikwa, Lasu, and Okab. Until we can guarantee the safety and security of our personnel operating in this area, we will continue to suspend the operations.
This marks the first killing of 8 workers in South Sudan since 2018, according to UN OCHA. A total of 115 aid workers have been killed in South Sudan since the outbreak of violence in December 2013. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir is calling on all organized forces to work with the armed opposition ahead of the fast-approaching November deadline to form a unity government. If that deadline holds, the parties that signed the revitalized peace deal are expected to integrate their forces into one army and one police force within a few weeks' time. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking at the start of a three-day police conference in Juba, President Kiir told senior police officers it is time to reconcile opposing forces in the country and to change hearts for the sake of the nation. He urged police officials to prepare an enabling environment for opposition forces.
When you in the South Sudan National Police Service are unified, I want you on our side to welcome your brothers and sisters that are coming to join you from the opposition groups. I want you all to welcome them and forget all the bitterness of the internal conflict, which was fueled by the politicians in 2013 and again in 2016.
Speaking in Arabic, the president also ordered all security forces occupying the houses of opposition officials and internally displaced persons to vacate those properties immediately.
When a search is made, it will be found that most organized forces are the ones staying in those houses, and these are senior officers staying in some people's houses. And when the poor person comes to claim his house, he finds you seated with all your bodyguards and your arms, and you want even to kill him if he doesn't leave your place. No, this thing must stop.
Mr. Kiir says once opposition forces return to the government, it will prove that the parties to the agreement are working to restore peace and stability in the country. But Kiir conceded it will be difficult to convince civilians, including returning refugees or internally displaced persons, that the country is peaceful if they do not feel safe. He says some civilians still live in fear because they have been harassed or have experienced the other forms of injustice by members of organized forces.
That is why our people are complaining about different types of abuses by our own security forces, whether they are in the army, in the military intelligence, or in the national security forces. The return of peace through the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement and the formation of the revitalized transitional government of national unity restores your responsibility as police to protect our people and their property.
President Kiir says citizens have lost trust in the police and security forces because of rogue elements in both forces. He warned police officers, especially traffic police, that if they abuse their positions of power with the civilians, they should be fired.
Those who abuse the citizens must stop doing that. I order your leaders, including the Minister of Interior, to bring those who continue to disobey the law to face the full force of the law and be dismissed from the police service if that becomes necessary.
Kiir says organizations that are implementing pre-transitional activities have all reported what he describes as encouraging results with the opposition forces and government forces that are being cantoned and trained in preparation for unifying government and opposition forces. He told the police officers he expects the parties to the peace deal to form a unity government on the deadline of November 12. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan's petroleum minister says oil companies operating in the country must deliver to the South Sudanese people by putting refineries to work for local consumption and at the same time protect the environment. The minister spoke at the start of a two-day oil and power conference that kicked off in Juba yesterday, aimed at wooing investors into the country's oil industry. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Speaking today at the start of a two-day oil and power conference aimed at encouraging foreign investment in South Sudan's oil sector, Petroleum Minister Awo Daniel Chuang says this year's conference comes at the right time.
It comes at a time when South Sudan is relatively enjoying peace and stability, especially at the dawn of forming the new government of South Sudan. This also will raise a lot of hopes for the international and also regional players in oil and gas to come to South Sudan confidently.
Minister Chuang says South Sudan is operating at about 11% of its oil and gas potential. He says the conference will look at how to improve the country's oil field technology and make oil production environment friendly. Beginning next month, Chuang says his ministry will issue a tender for independent companies to conduct environmental audits in South Sudan.
We want to make sure that the people of South Sudan benefit from this environmental audit as it identifies the causes of pollution and also to mitigate any future damages to the environment.
A two-week-long oil spill that began September 25th polluted several areas and killed scores of animals and crops in former Unity State, according to local officials. The pipeline was owned by Greater Pioneer Operating Company, an oil consortium owned by China's National Petroleum Corporation, Malaysia's Petronas, India's ONGC, FEDES, and South Sudan's government-run Nile Petroleum Corporation. At the time, Chuang said as much as 2,000 barrels of oil could have leaked into the surrounding land and water. Today, Chuang says this year's oil and gas licensing will allow investors to compete in more than 14 blocks of oil fields in South Sudan.
14 blocks. We have A1 up to A6, and we have E1, E2. We have C1, C2, and C3. These are new blocks that were not there before, and we have also D1, D2. So if you count them, and including B1, which is still free, then you have around 13 blocks that are still free. So we're inviting all our investors who would want to invest in South Sudan to come and look into those blocks.
Chuang says South Sudan's oil production stands at 175,000 barrels per day, down from 350,000 barrels per day before the outbreak of war in 2013. Oil companies operating in South Sudan have expressed concern about the country's business environment, something they say political leaders should address to attract more investors. NJ Ayuk is the chief executive officer of the Africa Energy Chamber.
We still expect more from you. We still expect you to do more in creating an enabling environment that we can vote with our wallets. We still expect from you to make it easier to do business.
South Sudan First Vice President Taban Dengai is urging companies investing in South Sudan's oil sector to protect the environment and use modern technology that is environmentally friendly.
Some of the things that you need to do immediately is the leftover of a drill site. Because after you finish your drilling, you get oil, you do not get oil, you leave those places, the drilling places. That has caused a lot of problem to us. An open place, instead of closing it, and removing the chemical, the leftover residuals that are there is a difficulty.
Representatives from Ethiopia, Kenya, and Egypt are among the participants at the conference. Kwang Tutlam is a state petroleum minister from Ethiopia's Gambela region.
Some of the South Sudan oil wells are located closer to Ethiopian southwestern border. And Ethiopia, with population of 100 million people and a huge demand of hydrocarbons, can provide one of the best markets for South Sudan oil because of its proximity.
Tutlam says with mutual cooperation, South Sudan could also benefit from Ethiopia's hydroelectric power. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Civil society groups in South Sudan are sounding the alarm about widespread environmental damage caused by oil companies operating in the country. South Sudan's petroleum minister says his office will hire an outside firm to audit the damages from pipeline leaks and other damage caused by oil firms. Winnie Torino has more for VOA from Juba.
Charles Jido, who heads South Sudan Civil Society Coalition on Natural Resources, says the just-concluded oil and gas conference in Juba provided a unique opportunity for the government to boost investment in the oil sector and jumpstart the country's economic recovery, but he says it must be done in a responsible way. Jido says investors in the oil sector must do more to protect the environment and give back to communities in oil-producing areas.
The existing investors who have already established prison in the country have not done enough to contribute to the development of local communities. Creation of jobs for the youth and, most importantly, adequately compensate communities for the loss of their ancestral lands. As such, we call on the governments and investors to urgently initiate community projects, including the provision of education, water, health, roads, and rural electricity infrastructure as part of the social corporate responsibility of the companies to give back to the communities.
While Jido applauds the government's plan to conduct environmental, health and safety audits in communities affected by the toxic effects of oil exploration and extraction, he says the investigative teams of experts conducting the audits should be independent from the government. He points out the government is earning more money from oil exports this year, but those profits have not translated into economic stability for local communities, which still lack basic services. And Jido says there is little to no transparency in how oil profits are spent in South Sudan.
We call on the government to prioritize and embrace transparent investment in the oil sector that gives citizens their deserved share of the extractive and other natural resources. We further call on the governments and investors to exercise transparency and accountability in all transactions in the natural resources sector, as indicated in the revitalized Peace Agreement Chapter 4, Article 4.8, and the Petroleum Act 2012, Article 79, 1 and 3, that demand oil companies to disclose information on payment made to the government.
Jido is also calling on the government to implement the Petroleum Revenue Management Act of 2003, which states that 2-3% of net petroleum revenue must be returned to oil-producing states and communities. He says the government needs to set up community development committees that would administer oil shares to the various oil-producing communities. South Sudan Petroleum Minister Awou Daniel Chuang says he can confirm that 90% of oil sector employees in the country are South Sudanese. Chuang says his ministry will run an audit for the first time to guide the ministry on environmental regulations that will safeguard oil production operations.
You cannot talk about environment if you don't have to quantify what are the damages. You can just say, visually you can see, oh, there's a damage here, but how do you quantify this will be determined by the audit. And this audit also will tell you that there's a damage here.
Chuang says the audit will address questions like how can the damage be corrected and how will mitigation be carried out for the affected communities. He says the Petroleum Ministry is planning community development activities so that oil-producing communities will benefit from oil production. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at Kenya's reputation as a producer of world-class marathon runners. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in which way are you most like your parents?
In my physical appearance, I'm most like my dad. I do not really look like my mom. She talks a lot, but I also don't like talking.
I look very much like my dad, and I speak like him too. But as for my mother, I don't resemble her at all, but I love her anyway.
I'm like my dad when it comes to giving orders, like leading. And then when it comes to my mom, I'm like her when it comes to cooking, because she has good cooking skills.
Like my character. People say I'm like my parents when it comes to character. Like the way I behave, the way I socialize, it's just like the way my parents do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Kenya's reputation as a producer of world-class marathon runners was further boosted this month when Kenya's Eliud Kipchoge Eliud Kipchohu and Brigid Kosgei broke world records on the same weekend. Running is a big thing for the East African nation, where regular competitions give young runners a chance to prepare for greater glory. Mohamed Yusuf has more from Kenya.
RDJ, silence for the start. Romeanza.
Kenya's Ndalat cross-country races, a yearly event in the Rift Valley, attracts more than 5,000 runners of all ages. This year's contest comes just a week after Kenyan marathon runners Eliud Kipchoge and Brigid Kosgei set a new world records in Chicago and Vienna. The chairman of the event, Abraham Mutai, says the competition nurtures new Kenyan talent.
We've managed to see that the young ones are the ones participating more. We've had about 2,500 of the young ones doing the race. And for sure, I can tell you this country will now have talents and make sure that the supply for athletes to the national team will never go dry because of Dalat cross country.
Runner Daisy Chepkemei won this year's 10-kilometer race. She dreams of representing Kenya on the global stage. I started this year in Gabon as number 2, says Chepkemei, and my sister was number 1 ranked, Nora Cheruto. Now I have built my body so that I can represent my country, she says. 22-year-old Robert Kiprop has similar dreams. He finished 3rd in the men's junior 10-kilometer race. My leg has been giving me a bit of a problem, says Kiprop. I was supposed to go to Berlin to compete, but I could not go because of injury. Then I prepared for this Ndalat race to try my luck, he says, and see how I'm recovering from my injury. Kenya's Rift Valley has produced most of the country's athletes and is filled with training camps. At Kericho County's Lomitit training camp, 40 young athletes hope to one day become champions. Emily Chebet was among the first runners to join the camp 12 years ago at the age of 14. Since joining the camp, she has won many competitions. I went to compete in Ethiopia, where I finished 4th in the 5,000-meter race, says Chebet. Then I went to Mauritius, where I won a gold medal for the 3,000 meters, she says, and then to Colombia, where I won a silver medal for the 3,000 meters. Recently, I graduated to compete in the 21 kilometers race at Chebet. Her sister, Beatrice Chebet, joined the camp 5 years ago after winning this year's World Under 20 Championship. She's even more ambitious.
By now, I prepare for Africa cross country.
Now I'm preparing for Africa cross country for the Olympics, said Chebet. I will work with my coach for the training, the help and the advice I need, she says, adding, I think I will do well. The competition is getting stiffer as many athletes want to represent Kenya at the 2020 Olympics in Japan. At the 2016 Games, Kenyan athletes captured 13 medals, all but one of them for running. At local competitions like in the Ndalat cross-country races, the winners get flowers and tea bags. It is a small but welcome beginning for many Kenyan athletes who hope to win greater rewards on the world stage. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Ndalat, Kenya.
Tutoring has long been a way for underperforming students to get a boost. Now it's become a lifeline for Zimbabwe's teachers, whose salaries are constantly losing ground to rising prices due to runaway inflation. Reporter Kudzai Zvenavashi has more details.
Opet Masaraure is a teachers' union leader. He paints a bleak picture of how teachers struggle to survive on their meagre income.
If an average teacher getting 900 local Zimbabwean currents at the RRTGS, which means this is only enough maybe to buy some loaves of bread. If you choose maybe to buy 2 loaves of bread per day, I think you can exhaust that in 30 days. That is, at the end of the day, you find teachers finding extra work elsewhere to supplement their teaching responsibilities.
He adds that teachers cannot afford health care, food, rent or education for their own children. As a result, they have to be resourceful to survive.
Because of the status quo, we've seen teachers going out of their way to teach learners out of the normal working hours. For example, when they knock off at around 4 p.m., they engage another class where they're also trying to eke out a living.
Masaraure says prices vary between $5 to $10 per month. He says this is more prominent in urban areas where family income levels are better than those in rural areas who often struggle to feed their families. He adds that the idea behind extra lessons is meant to help students who are lagging behind on their studies. As expected, mathematics, English, and science subjects often attract more students than other subjects. As the country's economy continues to decline, there have been growing calls by civil servants for industrial actions that will pressure government to realign their incomes with the cost of living. Government doctors have been staying home for the past 2 months, saying they can't afford to go to work. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
We turn to Guinea-Bissau now, where the Prime Minister has refused to step down after the President fired him and the rest of the cabinet as part of a contentious dispute which the regional group ECOWAS has been trying to mediate. The conflict is playing out as the country prepares for elections on November 24th while trying to avoid the periodic instability that has plagued it since independence in 1974. President José Mário Vaz, who is seeking re-election, dissolved the government by presidential decree on Monday, saying political chaos was undermining the government's functionality. But Prime Minister Aristides Gomes countered that Vaz was creating, quote, total disaster. The 15-nation Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, called the decree illegal and warned it might impose sanctions. Today, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged all political stakeholders to abide by the decisions taken by ECOWAS regarding the governance arrangements until the election. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Bra Menken by Reynolds the Gentleman.
Are you ready?
We've been listening to Reynolds the Gentleman with the song Bra Menchen. I'm Ayen Deng Bure in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
echanejo, Rebecca Memusio, echanejo, echanejo.